What does it mean to experience a deadly epidemic?
In recent months, people have struggled with this question, but it's not a new question. Welcome to Experiencing Epidemics podcast. We are Gaspar Jakovac,
Jorge Diaz Ceballos,
and Ian Hathaway, and we want to explore this question as historians by delving into personal narratives drawn from the long history of people's encounters with epidemics.
We do so thanks to the contributions of scholars based at the European University Institute and beyond.
This project is brought to you as part of the COVID-19 Knowledge Hub of the European University Institute. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of Experiencing Epidemics podcast. Today, we will take a close look at Venetian experiences of epidemics during a devastating plague outbreak that took place between 1575 and 1577. And to discuss this topic, our guest today is Dr. Jane Stevens Crashaw, senior lecturer in early modern European history at Oxford Brookes University. She is a historian of the Italian Renaissance whose research interests focus on the relationship between people and the places they inhabit. She is also an expert on the practical and cultural relevance of Venetian plague hospitals, the famous Lazaretti, and is the author of a wonderful book on this topic titled Plague Hospitals, Public Health for the City in Early Modern Venice from 2016. Dr. Stevens Crashaw, it is a pleasure welcoming you to the show today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, jumping right into our conversation, the sources you kindly translated and provided us with are extracts from a book titled Accounts of Some Events Taking Place in Venice During the Plague Years of 1576-77 by Rocco Benedetti. Before getting into this source, could you provide our listeners with some context about this particular outbreak of plague in Venice?
Yes, of course. This epidemic is one of the most severe to affect Venice during the pre-modern period, and not just Venice, other places in northern Italy as well. And by the end of the outbreak, about a quarter of the city's population has died. So that's just over 45,000 people out of a total population of just under 170,000. So it was 168,000 in the census of 1563.
Right. So as we'll have a chance to explore later, it really was a very disruptive event. But what about the text and its author? What do we know about them?
So Rocco Benedetti was a Venetian notary. He carries out that role within the city, we think between about 1556 and 1582. He publishes a number of texts, actually, and three of them commemorate key events in Venice in the 1570s. The fact that he, as a notary, records his experiences and publishes this sort of tract isn't necessarily all that surprising. Samuel Cohen, a book about different genres of plague writing, identified the successo della peste genre. And in this, actually, notaries are quite prominent because they were wandering the streets of these cities, taking down the wills of people who were unwell or perhaps preparing for death in the light of the epidemic. Benedetti himself records that he experienced a period of household quarantine. He suffered deaths within his family. His mother dies and other family members. So it's a vivid account. It's informed by his professional experience, and it expresses many of the intense emotions that we know a number of people in the city would have experienced over the course of the outbreak.
Thank you for the introduction. Now we begin our journey into Benedetti's text by listening to his vivid description of the Venetian Lazaretti, the plague hospitals.
Let us leave the city and turn our attention to the Lazaretti. I tell you the truth that, on the one hand, the Lazzaretto Vecchio resembles hell. From every side emanated filth and an unbearable stench, The sound of groans and sighs can be heard at all hours of the day and night. Clouds of smoke extend far into the sky from the burning of corpses. I have heard people say, who made a miraculous return from that hospital, that when the hospital is particularly full, the sick have to sleep 3 or 4 to a bed, and there aren't enough people to care for them because there is a lack of serving personnel. On the other hand, the Lazzaretto Nuovo resembles purgatory, where unfortunates carry out penance and mourn the loss of loved ones, their miserable state, and the desolation of their homes. At the moment, there are 7,000 or 8,000 patients at the Lazzaretto Vecchio. Thanks to the provisions of the health office, there are medicines, syrups, plasters, unguents, and other medical items for treatments, as well as distilled waters and other items to restore the sick. Even so, it would be impossible to meet the full demand for these things, and few receive them.
Well, that's quite unsettling. Benedetti did not seem to have a great opinion of the Lazzaretti in his writing. Were these places truly that bad? Can you tell us something more about them?
When Benedetti is describing the Venetian Lazzaretti, it's in the midst of this truly horrendous outbreak of plague. And I think, yes, the conditions and the experiences on these islands must have been truly terrible. During this plague outbreak, about half of the deaths that occur within Venice take place on these two hospital islands. And they're small. So that sense of the intensity of experiences, the intensity of suffering, the awareness of other people's suffering. Yes, I think that is, you know, likely to have been very true of people's experiences on these islands. That had never been the intention in developing these sites. So they were set up in the 15th century by the Venetian government. The Lazzaretto Vecchio was founded in 1423. And this was a time when plague epidemics hit on a much smaller scale, and they hit the city more regularly. And so they were never designed to deal with an epidemic on the scale of the outbreak of 1575-7. So most of the time, they would have accommodated incoming merchants and travellers. And I think in those periods, when you know, the number of patients on these sites would have been relatively low, and individuals were paying for their care, covering the costs of their care themselves, and would have been able to, you know, supply their own food largely, you know, experiences would have been very different. But yes, in the midst of these large-scale epidemics, when the hospitals were simply not sufficient to cope with the level of demand, conditions were very poor.
I see. Well, that really brings to mind the challenges faced by many institutions today in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic.
I think there is that sense, exactly, of healthcare systems and what happens when they become overwhelmed, and just how quickly this the kind of principles of operation, you know, get surpassed by the sheer scale of the patients being there, and that the principles on which they normally run, the compassion that would be at the forefront of care, the high quality of care, that isn't always possible when you're dealing with such large numbers. You know, that's the great tragedy of this account, and I think does, as you say, speak to contemporary concerns about healthcare systems in the current pandemic.
Yeah. Now, going back to the text quickly, I noticed that Benedetti seems to have a different tone in talking about the Lazzaretto Nuovo and the Lazzaretto Vecchio, perhaps even in their access to different kinds of medication, poultices, plasters and whatnot. Was there an actual difference between the two hospitals?
There is definitely, in terms of the function, a difference between the two hospitals, in that the Lazzaretto Vecchio is designed to care for those who are diagnosed with the disease, and the Lazzaretto Nuovo is used to accommodate patients who are either suspected of having come into contact with the disease, or who are convalescing after a period of treatment on the Lazzaretto Vecchio. So they are distinct in their purpose, and they operate very much as part of a kind of complex system within which, you know, the patients would be moved between these sites to carry out sort of stages in their care. So both were intended to be sites within which patients were treated. But in the pre-modern period, that meant, of course, using medicines. And as you say, these were herbal medicines, but also doing things like ensuring good quality foodstuffs, keeping spaces at ideal temperatures to allow the body to recover. And those things were also carefully thought about on these islands.
Thank you. Now, at this point, we are going to move on to another extract in which Benedetti describes some responses by Venetian authorities against the plague, particularly in regards to what we might think of as essential workers.
In summary, the Republic spent an astonishing sum of money in trying to meet the needs of inhabitants, running the hospitals and dealing with the disinfection of merchandise. Practical interventions were chaotic. Every advisor and official remained confused. No one could see how it was possible to meet the needs of the city on such a scale. For each district, nobles and citizens were appointed for the care of their neighbors. They reported to the presidents of their sestiero and together organized the nighttime guards. These guards were essential to protect the homes of those who had been sent to the lazzaretti. Heavy penalties were threatened to those who dared to wander through the city at night. Body clearers, pizzicamorti, were badly affected by the plague, so that this role was filled not only by vagabonds and other desperate souls, but also criminals who had been sentenced to galley service. Proclamations in the city and wider mainland state promised good payments to those who would serve at pizzicamorti. This worked, and many people arrived in the city, thrilled, as though they had been invited to a wedding.
The description of the confusion of the Venetian magistrates surely bears some resemblance to the reaction of many governments in the past few months. But I am also struck by the fact that ordinary citizens seem to play a very important role during this Venetian crisis. Why do you think a Venetian magistrate chose to rely so heavily on the inhabitants of the city?
I mean, I think that governance at this time recognized the value of the locality, the relevance of the locality for the lives of the inhabitants of their cities. It was really at this level that people were particularly known to neighbors and parish priests and local elites. But there's also something of the practical going on here in that the Venetian Health Office and the wider Venetian Republic simply wasn't sufficiently well staffed to be able to do all of the roles that the Health Office kind of undertook, from dealing with the recording of the transmission of infection, so which houses were infected, organising the transportation of the sick and those who needed to go into quarantine, out to the lazaretti, dealing with the supply of medicines and foodstuffs into people who were in household quarantine, and also ensuring that those who had died were treated with the respect that they needed to be. So the government needs to rely on local elites, and it does so to manage those systems, as well as to ensure that they're able to collate statistics, which they do really consistently, and they post these in places around the city so that people can go and see how the epidemic is progressing in terms of infections and also in terms of numbers of deaths within the city. So I think it's largely that the scale of the epidemic is so great that they need to rely on the knowledge and expertise that's available in the locality.
Right, right. Now, among the various roles Benedetti mentioned, the pizzicamorti, or the body clearers, seem to play a crucial role. Who were these people? And also, the term pizzicamorti, where does this come from? It means like dead pinchers, right?
Yeah, I think there is that sense, isn't there? And also sort of nabbing or catching in some way. And they are really interesting figures. They are employed directly by the health office, and they are There are a small number that are employed right at the beginning of the outbreak. And in the earliest sort of weeks of this 1575 outbreak, we read of the health office giving an extra barrel of wine to the body clearers for the work that they've had to undertake in the, you know, the extreme heat of the Venetian summer. But that was really nothing compared to what they would experience in the months and years that followed. And this is one of those roles we were just talking about, you know, the epidemic going way beyond what workers could cope with. And certainly this role of the body clearer is one that would fall into that category, because the scale of mortality and the way in which these individuals do contract the disease means that the government becomes absolutely desperate to be able to, you know, to try to fill these posts, and ends up having to try really quite unusual techniques, tactics to attract people to the post. So they promise, you know, lump sums if individuals survive to the end of an epidemic. They, as Benedetti records, kind of infamously offer those who have been convicted of crime. They have to, the nature of this crime is quite carefully stipulated. So it's not for the most serious of crimes, but if you like, for a more minor level misdemeanor, you could serve as a body clearer and in effect have the slate wiped clean. And I think what's distinct about these individuals is that their reputation becomes wrapped up with the controversy surrounding the changes that have to be made to what would have been the usual rituals for mourning and burial. And so they are largely not popular workers. They're undoubtedly associated with the spread of the disease. And the government does try to give them some protective clothing. In this period, that's kind of waxed garments, whether it's gloves or an overall, an apron of some sort, because smooth surfaces were believed to be less likely to catch the kind of sticky infected air particles that were the miasma. So there were attempts to protect these workers. They were also given a sort of overseer who had some medical expertise. Nevertheless, they were believed to be individuals who were likely to carry this disease.
So would you say they function as a sort of scapegoat?
I certainly think that some of the concerns that are leveled against these workers come about, you know, they tell us about the things that people were particularly concerned about. And so, you know, the concerns with the body clearers often are that they will, you know, be stealing goods from houses that where, you know, the owners have been taken off to the lazaretti, that they might take objects from bodies. But I guess most commonly it's that they will fail to show respect and compassion to those who have died.
The Senate attempt to use all possible remedies, both spiritual and secular. The council decided to impose an 8-day lockdown in the three worst affected neighborhoods. People were to remain in their houses, except for a few public officials. In order to meet the needs of the poor during this time, the sum of 6 soldi was provided by per head per day. This was much discussed, because it was so little. A barrier was placed in the middle of the Rialto Bridge with guards, and they did not allow anyone to pass without a license which had been signed by the authorities. Not seeing people coming and going in the lockdown part of the city was something which was utterly horrifying. For me, as a notary who passed through the city to record wills, it made my hair stand on end to walk through places which were solitary and overgrown. Sometimes it was impossible to hold back the tears at the sight of such a wonderful city, celebrated across the world for its trade, so deserted.
In this final extract, I was really struck by the dismay described by Benedetti when he faces the empty streets of Venice, which is a feeling that I think many of us are familiar with today. But in any case, the description drives home the idea that even though these epidemics were let's say, relatively common during the early modern period, this particular one was really perceived as an exceptional event.
No, I think that's right. I mean, these epidemics in the 16th century, they've become, they affect the city less frequently than those of the 15th century. So instead of perhaps every 8 to 10 years, they're affecting the city every 20 to 30 years. So they've become less common. But I think it's the scale of mortality, you know, that sense of the suddenness with which the disease really starts to spread in the summer of 1576, and that dramatic impact of periods of quarantine, of enforced quarantine. And the impact of that is so dramatic, and it's so intensely felt. The rhythms of urban life, the things that would have structured people's experiences of time. You know, so many of these things change virtually, certainly in the case of, an imposed quarantine, overnight.
So if I understand correctly, you are saying that someone living in the 15th century might, if they were lucky, of course, experience multiple outbreaks of plague during their lifetime, while by the 16th century, these had become, at least in Venice, more like a once-in-a-generation event.
That's exactly it. So this is not something that, as a notary, that Benedetti would have become accustomed to, or that, you know, might become something that he experiences a number of times through his working life. There is a real element of shock, I think, with this outbreak. Although Venice has this permanent public health as a sort of preventative system in place, it hadn't, through the 15th century, stopped plague coming in. And in the 16th century, I suspect that sense of, being prepared and having this public system, health system you can be proud of, it was hugely shocking that Venice, I think people who were, living in the city would have been shocked that Venice, even with all of that investment and this permanent system, would have experienced such a severe outbreak.
Fascinating. Now, returning briefly to the text, I noticed that Benedetti mentions how the magistrates of Venice put in place all the possible remedies, both spiritual and secular. Could you tell us something more about the spiritual aspect?
Yeah, I mean, what I'd say in a Venetian context is that it's considered to be a vibrant and a vital part of the response to this epidemic. And although in our discussion so far, I've been emphasizing the role of the state and the fact that the lazaretti are civic hospitals and they're state funded and so on, the balance of the significance of medical care versus spiritual remedies is in Venice as it would have been across pre-modern Europe in this period. The permanent staff to the lazaretti included a chaplain. Both sites had important chapels. In fact, the Lazaretto Vecchio had been the site for a religious community, and the buildings were then adapted for use as a hospital. In terms of the city itself, the government looks to the advice of key members of the church, as it does to members of the medical profession, and the way in which the government proceeds is very much to pursue, if you like, the whole spectrum of remedies in parallel.
Right. Yeah. So it's important to remember that though we might tend to focus on, say, the secular state-driven aspects of disease control, it's important to remember that in the early modern period, there was a whole bundle of strategies to address plague that we might not be as familiar with.
And I think it's one that that is supposed to be at the heart of domestic or private space, as well as being visible in public spaces. And so it's intended to be a way of dealing with disease that is visible in squares and streets and so on. And so in a number of Italian cities, you have portable altarpieces taken round and processions of religious images that are believed to have worked in the past in dealing with epidemics.
Yeah, and I guess to sort of wrap up our conversation on Benedetti, I just wanted to ask that he seems at multiple times to be very critical of the Venetian magistrates. Was he really? Why was he writing his book? Is it an open critique of the situation?
With these sorts of texts, they're one of the ways that attempts are made to capture experiences so that, you know, in the case of future epidemics, people can draw on, you know, these memories and records. Similarly, with the health office scribes, and I was mentioning earlier about all of the intense record keeping and archive building that goes on, it was very much intended that these epidemics should be not just remembered in a sort of general sense, but there were definite concerted efforts made to ensure that the experiences of epidemics were not lost.
Thank you. Now, I would like to ask you one final question. From the readings, it seems clear that this plague outbreak in Venice was something experienced in different ways by all of the city's population. Yet, in the account, all the players, all the people involved, from magistrate to pizzicamorto, appear to be male. But what about Venetian women? What role did they play in fighting the outbreak?
Thank you for the question, because it is a frustration that that the voices of women in this period, in terms of recording the work that they do, is definitely heard more faintly through the records that that I've tended to use in piecing together the history of these hospitals. But we do know that the work of women was vital. I mean, in the lazaretti that we talked about earlier, they have this permanent staff, and there is a head of the hospital who's known as the prior, and he is always appointed alongside either his wife as the prioress, or if he's unmarried, somebody who's described as a good woman to serve alongside him. So already in the structure of those hospitals, the Venetian Republic has recognised how important it is to have women and the medical expertise that they have on site. And what we tend to see in the archive is that for the prioress of the lazaretti, they are called on to serve, to administer medicines within the hospitals and sometimes within the city itself. But it's often, that work is often hidden because it's often attributed to, if you like, the marital unit or the familial unit. And that's why it's generally so hard to put it. You just get these fragments. The one exception to that, although the work is still very much wrapped up in a sort of familial marital unit, but one female medical practitioner who did emerge through my research, who actually serves in a slightly earlier period than the plague that we've been talking about, is a woman called Marietta Colocchi, and she's married to one of the Venetian health office doctors. And between them, they developed this cure for the plague known as a medical secret, which is widely used. It's used in the lazaretti, it's used in the city of Venice, and it's actually used as well in other places that fall under Venetian control in this period, on the mainland and in the Mediterranean. And she is obviously recognised as being an expert practitioner. So I think she's a good example of somebody who works, who's recognised. She in herself is valued, and yet she's only sort of largely trusted when she's appointed with her husband or with her son-in-law. She herself tries to be elected as a health office doctor in Venice, and she's unsuccessful.
I see, yeah. Thank you for helping us round out a picture that, as you say, is really often very one-sided. And thank you so much for being here with us today. I learned a lot, and it was a lovely conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you once again to Dr. Jane Stevens-Crashaw for being on the show with us today. And thank you also to my co-editor, Jorge Diaz-Ceballos, for bringing Benedetti's extracts to life, and to all those who have once again tuned in to listen to our little show. Of course, we have more content coming up for you in a couple weeks, when we will explore the travels and transformations experienced by John of Burgundy's plague treatise. Till next time, stay safe. Thank you.